This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek the assistance of your healthcare provider for medical conditions. The views and opinions of podcast guests do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the Clifton Health Department or City of Clifton. Please be advised that the topics discussed in this episode may be sensitive and could be triggering depending on your current life circumstances. We encourage you to listen with care and take breaks if needed. If you find the content overwhelming, please consider reaching out to a trusted friend, family member, or professional for support.
Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey, that also services the township of Little Falls.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
And today we are so happy that you tuned in, because today we are having a wonderful conversation about prostate cancer. One man's journey, a message for many. And today's guest, we welcome Joseph Ciano, Clifton resident, JK Realty owner, and Board of Ed commissioner. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. Honored to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And for those who don't know what prostate cancer is, I'm just going to give a brief definition from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Prostate cancer is caused by an excessive growth of cells in the prostate gland, which is part of the male reproductive system. It is a slow-growing cancer compared to other cancers, and most often found in a stage where it is highly treatable. This is the topic of today, and we just wanted to bring this to you so that we can shine a light on a gentleman's testimony. Joe, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, lifestyle, and what life was like before your diagnosis?
Absolutely. Once again, thank you very much for having me and shining a light on this. It's very important for people to get checked. So myself, it's easy. You mentioned it. I'm the owner and the realtor at JK Realty, Board of Ed Commissioner. Obviously, I'm here just speaking for myself today, not as a Board of Ed Commissioner. Of course. But, you know, me, my background is the gym I would go to. I was in a car accident a while back, so I stopped going to the gym because it really messed up my back. But just so you know, it doesn't matter. Whether you go to the gym or you don't go to the gym, that's not going to do anything for the diagnosis if you ever get it. Lifestyle is, listen, I eat what I shouldn't. I drink what I shouldn't. But once again, these things just don't matter. You could eat as healthy as possible. And, you know, one doctor told me, oh, yeah, if you change your diet completely, you go holistic, you go, you know, organic, it might help. And I'm like, well, if it might help, I'm just going to keep eating hamburgers because, you know, they're amazing. And if I'm going to live, I'm going to be happy. Right. And life before the diagnosis was almost life after the diagnosis, except not as scary.
All right, let's talk about it. So have you ever thought about prostate health prior to the diagnosis?
All the time. My grandfather had prostate problems. My grandfather was in his 80s when they found out he had prostate cancer. And at that time, they were like, don't do anything. He's 80 years old. Don't put him through it. And he lived to, I think he was 82 when they found it, and 89 when he passed away for something completely different. Cancer never grew because of his age. My father got it in his late 50s. And they said, you know, listen, there's like a speck of prostate cancer. And my father's like, you know, and they're like, there's a few things you could do. Seeds were an option at the time, which I don't even know if they do anymore, because if you have seeds in you, they're radioactive. You can't even have a kid or an animal on your lap because they'll get the radiation from it. So he chose, listen, just take it out at my age, you know, take it out. I'd rather be cautious. It was a completely different surgery then. I mean, they completely cut him like from side to side. And they took out the prostate and they found it riddled with prostate cancer. And this was a speck. And then months later, when they took it out, it was just all over the place. So the smartest thing he did was, so this has always been on my mind. I started getting my prostate checked in my 30s because I was so nervous about it.
Which is slightly early, but good to know that you had that family history to go and to the doctor and ask them about that.
Yeah, typically 40, 50 they want to start, but when it runs in your family, they'll start as early as 40. But when I would tell the doctor, say, this is my experience, they're like, you know what, we're going to start checking you a little earlier.
Wow,
and it wasn't very often, but it was just like, let's keep an eye on it and I'll listen to your body.
Excellent. That's actually really good for you because you advocated for yourself.
Absolutely. You have to. Because unfortunately, the doctors, most of them aren't going to.
Right. What were the first signs and symptoms that you found? Was it when you were doing regular testing or?
No.
No.
So I developed prostatitis at one time. Nobody knew what this was at first. I was just very uncomfortable. I was having so much trouble urinating. It was like, even if I was, a couple drips would come out, and I'm like, no, I have to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. And you would feel a pressure, like, on your stomach, like, this thing's just going to explode, which isn't going to happen, because they say your bladder could fill up, like, three times its size, and you're going to be fine. It's like a balloon. And then they found out it was prostatitis, and they gave me antibiotics. Now, the problem with that is, your prostate is the size of a walnut, and it's a hard gland. It's almost as hard as this table. The antibiotics, that's the last place that they penetrate. So I would be on antibiotics for 16 weeks at a time just to get it to penetrate the prostate.
Mm.
Wow.
And after 4, 5, 6 bouts of prostatitis every 6 months, every year, I was getting it. My general practitioner is like, oh, it's fine. You know, this is what happens. Your prostate's a little swollen, but that's because of the prostatitis. And then they would, when you have prostatitis and they would check your prostate, that just made it so much worse. Because now you're aggravating something that's already inflamed, and then you're uncomfortable for days. So finally I said, I don't think my general practitioner is doing this. This is years I was having prostatitis. And I mean, maybe 5, 6 years.
Wow.
And trusting the general practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I said, no. I got to go see a urologist.
Okay. That was your next step.
Yes. Which took too long to do, but I'm a man and I'm stubborn. And even when you think you're doing the right thing, listening to your doctor, it's not always the right thing. You kind of have to advocate for yourself.
Right. And so when you went to the urologist, how did that feel?
I was at a urologist when I was like a kid, for something. I don't even remember what it was for. I think it was something with the bladder. I don't even remember. I was young. So I was like, that's a urologist. And a lot of people have white coat syndrome. When you go to the doctor and your blood pressure shoots up and they have to wait a little while. My blood pressure is so good. I have high blood pressure. When I go to the doctor, it's low. They're like, you're fine. I'm like, no, I'm telling you, if I was home right now, it would be higher. I'm just very calm when I'm at a doctor's office because it's out of my hands. I'm letting them do what they do. There's nothing I'm going to do to make it better or make it worse. It was necessary, and it was something I know I had to do because I didn't think my general practitioner was really looking out for me anymore, which is scary to say.
Hmm.
But I knew the urologist was the next step, and then he did his own bouts of tests. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And with those bouts of tests, I want to say I'm sincerely sorry that you had that experience with your general practitioner. I want to highlight what you did, right, to take your own advice and to listen to your own body to go and make strides to say, no, I need a second opinion, and I'm going to go seek this other doctor out, this specialist. So kudos to you on that.
Absolutely, thank you.
And thanks to that urologist for doing extra tests. We love extra tests.
Yeah.
And how were they?
They were good. So it started with there's two PSAs. The one my general practitioner was doing was, I guess, a routine PSA. So that's, they check it in your urine.
Okay.
And it was always 0000. So then the urologist says, well, the first thing that we should do is a PSA of your blood. That's called, I believe, a total PSA. That is your most accurate prostate-specific antigen, if I'm remembering it correctly. And then that was a high level, and it wasn't high for anybody. It was high for me. It was like over 4. I've seen these things at 14, 15, 16. So mine over 4, he's like, it's cause for concern because you have so much prostatitis, because it's a little elevated. We would want you to be under 3 at your age, and you're at 4. So let's just do an MRI.
Okay.
They do the MRI. The MRI shows spots that they want to now do a biopsy of. He said, honestly, we probably would have done a biopsy anyway. That's just standard MRI biopsy. But we did see where we wanted to pinpoint. So I went for the biopsy, which is very uncomfortable, by the way. It's not a good experience. You're sore for days. And they said, we're going to take about 6 or 8 samples. And they're microscopic samples they take. So I woke up, and I felt like they, like, just did something wrong. I was in excruciating pain the second I woke up. And I was like, what did you do? He's like, we had to take 24 samples. And then I got scared. I'm like, whoa. We went from 6 to 8 samples to 24. And then I knew that something was probably going to come of that. Even though I was being like, oh, they're just being extra cautious. You know, everything's going to be fine. And then now with your medical chart, you get it before they the call portal. You.
Oh. Right.
Right.
Yes, the portal.
Now, luckily, my sister Catherine was a medical transcriptionist. So I'm looking at this thing like, this doesn't look good, right? It looks like I might have a problem here. So I sent them to her. And then she was like, listen, you got to go see the doctor because it looks like they're going to tell you that you have prostate cancer. Hmm. And hearing it from her was bad. Hearing it from the doctor, like, you don't expect it. You expect them to be like, well, okay, well, it looks like cancer, but it's not. And the way he said it, and I went with my wife, you know, because obviously we know I'm going to get some kind of news. She's like, I'm going with you. I was like, okay, good. Mm-hmm. You have prostate cancer, but it's low prostate cancer. It's nothing to be concerned about. You know, what we're going to do is we're just going to watch it. It's never going to grow. It's never going to get any worse. You know, it'll probably stay in that spot for the rest of your life. And we'll just do active surveillance every 6 months, every year. And I can't repeat what my wife said. And she was like, what are you doing? You know, there's cancer in his body. He goes, oh, you don't understand prostate cancers. Mm. You know, it's at his age, it's pretty common. And I'm thinking in my head, this actually isn't very common at my age. Like, I know enough.
Did the urologist know your family history at that time?
So that's why he wanted me to do it at 4. That's why he wanted me to do the MRI and the biopsy. So then it's time to get other opinions.
Okay.
And we decided 3 more. And I won't name them all because they weren't all on the same page. Second opinion, remove the prostate or cut away where you have issues. Now, what they found on me was on each side of my prostate. So the one doctor's like, if you cut it away, you're not going to have anything left anyway. You're going to have a fraction of a prostate. You're better off removing it. The other guy, third guy, because it's the first guy doesn't count. We did 3 more. Second guy's like, active surveillance, that's your best bet. Hmm. And we're just thinking to ourselves, like, how do you feel? Like, you have cancer, so you're leaving this in my body? It didn't make any sense. Now then, and these people I'm going to name, went to Sloan Kettering. So when I went to, I had a Gleason score, which is a risk table. It goes from 1 to 10. 1 to 6 is low risk. 7 is moderate. 8 to 10 is high risk. They had me at a 6, my original practitioner. No one else, I'm sorry, urologist. No one else checked those numbers. No one else decided to, hey, let me take a look and have our own people look. They were just going off that paperwork. Oh, we see this. Now, Sloan Kettering did everything all over again. They had their experts look at it. And as soon as I sat down, they're like, listen, it's a 7. That's the first thing they said. Mm. You know, it's moderate risk. It's not low risk. Where it is very close to lymph nodes, which we never knew before, and we are worried that this could easily spread to a lymph node.
A different type of cancer,
basically. And then we start talking about options, but the only option was prostate removal, and they did it like a month and a half later. That's how quickly he wanted it out.
Wow.
Because of how close it was to the lymph nodes.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, yeah, no.
I want to take a moment just to give you thanks because sometimes it's hard to relive it.
It's important, though.
But it is.
I want everyone to know. So I talk about it as much as I can. You know, I tell everybody, go get checked. There's so many people. Right. I remember my barber. My barber is never late, ever. And he was like 10 minutes late once. And I'm like sitting there like, what's going on here? I've been going to him for years. He's like, I was at the doctor. I got my prostate checked. I was like, That's it. That's why I told you what happened. And right. So many people have come to me. I've gotten phone calls. Hey, where did you go? What do you recommend? Because I'm telling everyone.
Yeah. And I want to thank you so much for being on this podcast, because we want to get your testimony out there.
Absolutely.
So many people can hear it. And so after, let's dive back in.
Yeah. I'm all over after the place.
You,
I know.
No. After your treatment, after you had the removal.
Yeah.
2 months later. How long were you in recovery?
So let's talk. The surgery was 6.5 hours, which was crazy.
Wow.
It was supposed to be robotic, and I have five incisions now on my stomach. The one right in the middle above the belly button, he went in surgically himself, which he wasn't supposed to do. But there was something that he needed to get in that the robots couldn't. So they removed the prostate and 28 lymph nodes. So they removed all the lymph nodes.
Wow.
Because they were very worried that that's how close it was. I woke up in recovery, and there's my wife and a friend of mine who showed up in Manhattan, of all places, my buddy Reed, and he's standing there with my wife. And I'm like, I was blown away. Like, you came to Manhattan to see me and just to sit with her, above and beyond, you know? And my shoulder hurt so bad. I thought they dislocated my shoulder. And I was like, I didn't feel any other pain except the shoulder at that moment. And my buddy Reed's like, out in the hallway, you got to get in there. What did you do to his shoulder? Something's not right. And they're like, it's the air. They pumped me so, I mean, I was twice my size. I look like a balloon. They pumped me so full of air, it all traveled to my shoulder. And that's where I was feeling that intense pain from. They had to prop my, I couldn't move my arm. They had to prop my arm up on these pillows, and I couldn't move it for hours. It was incredible.
Wow.
And then the catheter was the second most painful thing besides the shoulder. The incisions didn't hurt that bad. The stomach was bad, but, they had me on pills and everything, and they were very cautious with the painkillers. They're like, we're only giving you this. That's all you get. But there was no relief for the catheter pain. That was what I was least looking forward to.
Mm. Now, how did that make you feel emotionally?
I felt like, you see, that goes into, you got to get up and walk around, right? They make you, I was there one night because it was an overnight stay, and then you go home the next day. That's it. It wasn't a hospital that I was staying at. Mm. It was a surgical center. I could only stay for so long without it being considered a hospital.
Wow.
They kept getting me up to walk around. It was very hard for me to walk around. The stomach hurt, but the catheter made it almost impossible. And then I see these 70, 80-year-old men having the same surgery I had running laps around me. So I felt like, what the heck did you do to me? I felt like, what is wrong with me that I'm half their age and I'm walking like a crippled old man, like baby steps. I was getting dizzy. I was not doing well compared to every, and I was the youngest person there.
Was this your first time under anesthesia?
No.
No, okay.
And it was just the pain that I was feeling that was making it so hard for me to walk. And I have to walk to go home. You have to walk. And then one of the caretakers, which they were amazing at Sloan Kettering. I can't thank them enough. The best treatment I could have ever asked for. They're like, listen, you're 42. They're 80.
Wow.
Guess what? They're not feeling the same pain that you are. They are able to handle this pain better than you. When you're the younger you are, the worse it is. So that made me feel a little better. But not being able to do anything was, I couldn't even, empty my own catheter.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't bend down. So I was relying on my wife and my sister. Those are my sister's probably least favorite thing she's ever had to do in her life. But she did it.
She did it, yeah.
You know, and they gave me two catheters. One was like a big bag that I could just wear all the time and just go to the toilet and empty.
Right.
And the other one was a walk-around catheter that strapped to your leg, and that one filled up quick. I did it once, and then I never put it on again. I just had that big one. Because if there was nobody there, I couldn't empty that. There was no way for me to bend down to open that and then be able to close it again. I mean, I could not bend. And I couldn't walk properly because the catheter was so... That pain never went away. Ever. Throughout the whole time I had that in.
Did you ever talk to those old men and kind of see what advice they would give you?
No, or? Because there was really no talking. I was so out of it when I was in there. And I was literally only in there. The surgery was 6.5 hours. It was around 3-4 o'clock when I was waking up. And then we were only there the next day. I think we left by 11.
Wow.
But it felt a lot longer than that because they kept waking you up.
And making sure.
It was funny. I was thirsty. I was like hungry, but not hungry. And they were very good. Like, here's grilled cheese. And they had like a snack room for us and for the people with us because my wife slept there the night. And then it was like, oh, go get juice, pudding. You know, there's snacks in there. So she'd be able, but she'd keep bringing me like pudding and orange Jell-O. That's the only Jell-O they had. And mint tea. And to this day, I drink mint tea almost every morning because of that. Because it was so comforting to me during the surgery. And the guy knew it. He was like, why don't we go for a little walk? He's like, and then I'll get you some mint tea. Like, he knew that it was making me feel better for some reason. And the orange Jell-O. I had orange Jell-O when I got home. It was disgusting. But in the place, it was like the most amazing thing. I was eating more than pudding.
Right.
But then when I got home, I was like, nope, I don't want pudding. I want pudding now.
Did you have any fears or misconceptions about prostate cancer during this entire time? Like, did you feel...
No.
Like, you could have did the observation?
The fear came after.
Okay.
Because, okay, they took the prostate out. And it's not a biopsy anymore, but they check the prostate. And the doctor called me to follow up. It was Friday. I went home, I believe, Thursday. He called me the next day or a day or two later. Hey, Joe, just want to check in. I told him the first thing was, it was a few days later because the catheter was coming out Friday. Whew. By the way, I had to take out the catheter myself. They didn't want me going anywhere. They're like, you're doing it yourself. Yeah, that was fun. There was at one point I was like, this is it. This is my life forever because I couldn't. It was the most painful thing, ripping that thing out. Not ripping it out, but getting it out. But he called me and he's like, I want to give you some news. You know, I forget what they did to the prostate. It's not a biopsy, but they checked the entire thing. And it was like, we made the best decision possible. He's like, we had to remove all your lymph nodes. It was very close to them, but the lymph nodes have no cancer. He says, but we found within your prostate high-risk cancer that didn't show up on any of those 24 samples that they took all over my prostate, 24 samples. And more than likely, it would have led to your bones within a year.
Oh, wow.
Then I got scared. I was like, wow. Because I never knew that prostate cancer led to bone cancer. That's new to me. Mm-hmm. And I know about prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. I don't think my father knew that, and he had his battle. I don't think my family knew that, and we are very aware of prostate cancer. And then when I heard that, I was just like, it was like a sigh of relief, but it was very scary hearing that. Like, it's scary living with cancer.
Yeah.
When people are telling you, don't do anything, leave it in your body. That was just the weirdest thing for us. And even all of our friends, we had so much support. Mm. Like, everybody's like, I want to take you for a drink. I want to take you to dinner. I want to do something before your surgery. I couldn't do it. It was like 40, 50 people that wanted to do something with me.
Right.
So I went to Alexis while it was still open. And I said, listen, this is what I want to do. Everybody wants to explain what was going on. And I was like, I just want a little space here. So she gave me like 4 tables. That whole first floor was filled up with people. And I just put on Facebook, hey, if you want to come have a drink with me. It was the last night I could drink before the surgery. It was like a week before. They're like, don't drink anymore. Yeah. I'm like, all right, let's go big tonight. And it was amazing the amount of people there. It was like a wedding. Like, it was just all these people. And then I was like, I got this. I was scared going into surgery. I had never had surgery, except my tonsils were out. That was not this.
No.
And seeing all the support, Gina made me this shirt that said, you know, cancer, get out. I don't have room for you. It was like, I wore that. I actually wore that to and out of the Sloan Kettering.
Wow.
So the support system helped tremendously. And then the calls and the gift baskets.
How about after?
Oh, it was insane the amount of calls I got. I was not letting anybody at my house because the catheter was very... I didn't want anybody to see that. Mm-hmm. I was very uncomfortable. Nobody wanted to see me. And I was blown up. Like, it took a long time for all that air to leave my body. It was insane. Mm-hmm. And that was uncomfortable on its own. But so many calls, like every day, people stopping, dropping off little, you know, gift bags. Here, we got you this, we got you this. Buddy Ed Matthews gave me these Uber Eats gift cards. And I was like, you don't have to do it. He goes, trust me, they're going to come in handy. Yeah, I mean, so many. The Board of Ed sent me a basket. You know, Kim West sent me something from Pizza Uno, a really beautiful soup basket. And it was like, they deliver soup to you, but everything's fresh, and all you have to do is put it in the pot. The rolls are fresh. Everything's fresh. And now I give it to everybody. Somebody's sick. I'm like, this is what you're getting. It was the most comforting thing. Mm-hmm. But it was like, and I remember my wife was like, because I got really emotional. When I got home, there were so many baskets waiting for me, and I didn't expect that. Mm-hmm. But that, once again, the support system helps tremendously. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have gone through it as well as I did without everybody. Oh, my wife especially.
Right.
Yeah, because if not for my wife, I might have been doing active surveillance.
During this journey, did you ever meet anyone else with this experience?
Oh, yeah. So once I came out with it, a lot of people would start coming up to me telling me that they went through it. If you, you know, have any questions, call me anytime. And it was a lot of older men.
Hmm.
I'm the youngest person in my family
right.
to ever have gone through this. And the crazy thing is I knew I was going to get prostate cancer at some point in my life.
Because of the family.
My grandfather, my father, it's going to happen to me. I was thinking like 60, you know, or, you know, 42 years old.
That's tough.
I didn't expect that. And there was nothing really I could have done to prevent it. It's in my body. It's in my genes. Mm-hmm. And now they have a test called like a BRCA test, like a BRCA test, that'll tell you if it's breast cancer or prostate cancer. It'll tell you how susceptible you are to it. So you can go get this test, and if it's positive, it means basically you're probably going to get this. Mm. Which, you know, I actually tested and didn't have it, but I still got it. But it's important to know that test is out there for anybody that has it in their family, especially breast cancer. You know, go get the BRCA test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Specifically, yeah, absolutely. Now, after, how are you doing now?
I feel good.
Feel good.
The healing is still there. You know, then the doctor said it could take a year. I went for 3-month checkups twice.
Okay.
Now I go in 6 months. My PSA has been zero, which is exactly good. What they want to see now.
Yeah.
Incisions are good, you know, and now it's just trying to get back to the gym because I've gained a lot of weight since this happened. But your body kind of just stops moving. Mm. You know, where they did the incisions, I can't lay down flat to this day. Like, when I'm sleeping, I have to sleep on an incline. Because if I lay flat, I feel everything stretching. And it's very uncomfortable.
Okay.
And I pee all the time. Oh, my God. Because the prostate was actually holding back urine when the bladder was full. Which I never knew before. But the doctor said, listen, we rebuilt your bladder. We rebuilt your urethra. We had to move stuff around because we got rid of an organ that you've that had really, your whole life that is supposed to be there. So they said, we moved everything around. And you could tell. Like, it's different now. Everything's different. Like, I know if I drink something,
you immediately have to
go. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing holding it back. But I'm very lucky with that. You know, a lot of people have incontinence after. Never once did I have an issue with that. And that's, you know, knock on wood. I had an amazing doctor, though. That was Dr. Gaffney from Sloan Kettering. Mm-hmm. Young guy.
Hmm.
Unbelievable what he did.
Wow. Kudos to him. Thank you for that. And thank you for saving your life.
Yes. Yes. Thank him. Yeah. Thank her. Thank everybody. Yes.
Yeah. What would you say to someone who has recently been diagnosed with prostate cancer?
Take it out.
Number one thing, take it
just
out.
Just get it out. The problem is, like, if you're, like, listen, I never wanted kids. I always knew that young. Kids weren't for me. Even though, you know, Board of Ed, technically I have 12,000 of them right now. I make that joke all the time. I never wanted kids. You know, it's just not my journey. If you wanted to have kids, you won't. The prostate is necessary to have children.
Okay.
So there's things you could do, you know, and they offered it. Hey, do you want to freeze sperm? Do you want to do anything? I'm like, no. I'm like, that's no. And that's like very expensive to store. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to do that for something I've always known I'm not going to do. But there's things that you have to be aware of. You know, if you want to have kids, you just can't. So that's something you're going to have to think of. But if you have prostate cancer and they're telling you to do active surveillance, or they're telling you to do, they also have that laser therapy thing, which I didn't look into, and I forget what it's called, like laser scope or something. Once again, they're cutting away the part of the prostate that's the problem, but your prostate is so small that you're just better getting rid of it.
I'm just like, wow. That's true, because with family history, early you started early surveillance at 30.
Yeah, in my early
30s. In your early 30s. And they now recommend it with family history, early surveillance at 45. Or 40.
40. I think it's 40, about 40. Between 40 and 50, 40 and I think. 50. Yeah. So 45. Yeah, we'll meet in the middle.
But with that recommendation, you got it at 42.
Yeah.
So it's also, you have to advocate for yourself.
Yes, because I also think I had it earlier because of the prostatitis. Yeah. And just my general practitioner, who I won't mention, who I don't go to anymore, was not looking out for me. But here's the problem. The doctors in the hospitals are going to make a lot more money if it gets worse than if it gets better.
That's so sad.
Meanwhile, all the people I went to, they were not advocating for my best interest except for Sloan Kettering. Sloan Kettering was tier two on my insurance, so I'm responsible for 50% of all of that. That's a lot of money. It's worth it. The nice thing is I don't have to pay it all, because guess what? That doesn't show up on credit anymore. You don't go to collections for stuff like that. It's a big amount of money. So if you can't get somebody in your network and you feel so comfortable with somebody that's not in it, go with who you're comfortable with. Go with who you think is going to fight for you best. Dr. Gaffney fought for me.
Right.
He told me right out bat, they're wrong, this is how it is, and he showed me the proof. He showed us the charts, which no one else did. They were just talking to us like, I'm a doctor, I know better than you, listen to what I say because, you know, it's the word of God. No, you know, explain it to me, show me.
Right.
And Sloan Kettering did that. Mm-hmm. And they're still amazing to this day. I mean, they're just, they care. They really do. But that's where you go when you have cancer. It's the number one place to go.
Right. What advice do you have for men who haven't been screened yet or who might be avoiding it?
It's better to know than not to know. Men are stubborn. We're all stubborn. I'm stubborn. I was stubborn. It took me forever battling. And prostatitis was horrible. And I just kept dealing with it. And being on antibiotics for extended periods of time is not good for you.
Right.
Even though I was taking probiotics, it was destroying my gut health. I know that. Don't be afraid of being healthy. That's what it comes down to. The prostate, the fact that it could lead to bone cancer, which many people don't know, that should be your wake-up call. You know, do I want to deal with it now, or do I deal with it when it's in my bones or it spreads to my lymph nodes and now there it's all over the place, because it will spread. It's cancer. It's like a wildfire.
Right. Why do you think it's important to talk openly about this?
I want everybody to know. I want them to go get checked. Yeah. I want them to ask me questions if they have it. I've had so many people call me. Hey, what doctor have you gone to? Hey, thank you for your story. I'm going to get checked now. And that makes me feel amazing. I talked about, I was at Relay for Life. I was their designated survivor. All I did was talk about prostate cancer. Right. And I, you know, I have geared it towards the men and the people that have men in their lives, that if you care, it's a simple blood test. That's all it is. Maybe it's going to cost you $100 to do. I don't know. I know it wasn't free for me, but I wanted the blood test that he recommended, and the urine test does nothing. The urine test might be free. Go get your blood checked, get your PSA checked, and if it's a high level, you have to do what you have to do. You have to do the biopsy and you have to do the MRI. And it might show nothing, but it's your life. You get one round at this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Looking back, what is there anything you wish you would have done sooner?
Hey, I wish I would have dropped my GP sooner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should have known after the third bout with prostatitis that this guy wasn't looking out for my best interest. You know, I've been looking for a new doctor, like an actual doctor that knows his patients' names.
Mm.
You know, like in the old days, you would go in and you'd be like, hey, Joe, how are you? You know, how's everything? How's the wife? You know, they don't know who I am anymore. They see thousands of people. I'm just another person on a chart. And you're not familiar with my history. And he would ask me questions that you know the answer to. I've been coming to you for years. How do you not know this yet? My biggest regret is not going to the urologist sooner.
Okay.
And sticking with my GP for as long as I did.
So you wish that your GP had emotional intelligence, basically?
Or a smaller practice.
Human, right?
Right? And mm-hmm. I know they all want to make money, but...
Sometimes that's...
When I was a kid, that doctor knew me.
Right.
Like, I'd never forget, I went to Dr. Sutter when I was a kid. Every time I went in, he knew who I was. He had that big smile on his face. He made me feel comfortable. He asked me questions. Like, he knew. He knew my family. Like, this guy actually cared. And it was a pretty decent practice. But he knew. And these were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew us, you know. And that's, right. You know, you kind of want to see that again. It's just hard to find. What am I going to do? Move to the sticks and then find that doctor who, because there's 20 people in town, he knows everybody's name?
Mm.
Now, this is where I am. I'm a Clifton boy.
Is there a message or a takeaway you would like to leave with our listeners today? Which I think it's the theme of the whole thing.
Yes.
But you can say it again.
Cancer sucks.
Yeah.
Go get checked. It's a simple test. If you have questions, you could call me anytime. I'm the easiest guy to find in Clifton. My phone number's everywhere. And I like people calling me with questions about this because I experienced it from beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually had the surgery. I had complications from the surgery. I found out that, hey, it would have led to your bone. I found out that the small, low-risk cancer was actually high-risk cancer that in a year, so in February of this year, I'm going to be thinking at this point I could have had bone cancer if I hadn't had that prostate out. Talk to your doctor. Listen to your body. It's right. That easy. Your body's going to tell you if there's something wrong. Don't be a stubborn man like I am. I always will be. Ask my wife. I'm one of the most stubborn people you'll ever meet, but that's what we are. You know, even when men have a cold, we're the biggest babies out there. We really are.
Really? Yeah. Truly?
Yes, and I know it, because when I'm sick, I'm like, oh, that's it. End of the world right now. Even with my allergies right now, I'm like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the worst of it. But really, listen to your body. It's so important. Like I said, one round. You get one round in this life. Don't.
Right.
If you could get something horrible in your body, taken out of your body because you knew something was wrong, do that. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to be healthy.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you.
Don't be afraid to be healthy. To all the men out there listening, I hope this testimony... gave you a little bit of courage to call your doctor and to know that if you are struggling in any way, you have someone here who can relate and who can actively have a conversation if you do have questions.
Absolutely. I've used my voice in the Board of Ed meetings.
Right.
I talked about it at the city council meetings. I want everybody getting checked all the time. Just
yes.
Go get checked once a year. That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. Once a year. Go get checked. And if you see any free screenings, any free prostate screenings, which we did have at the end of September, please go and get checked. And please go and just do that blood test. Here at the health department, we are also here for you. If you have any questions or need any referrals, we do work closely with a few hospitals that might have a urology department that might be helpful. Please give us a call. Thank you so much, Joe. Do you have any final words?
No, this was great. Thank you so much for having me and shining a light on this. It's very important. I want to see more people talking about it. It surprises me I don't see more people talking about it. It's very common. It's one of the most common forms of cancer in men. I think because the survival rate is so high, people don't talk about it enough. But if you don't know, or if you don't go get checked, and guess what? The survival rate for prostate cancer is high. Not for bone cancer.
Because...
And that's what it leads to.
Right.
So just because you're saying one thing is, hey, you're going to survive it, it's fine, it's no big deal. Cancer's a big deal, no matter where it is.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, Lauren, take us out.
Don't forget to tune in to our podcast every other week for a new episode. You may visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. Follow us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?